That was the opening of Schumann's Arbeg Variations, and it was performed by Anna Genushenya. I'm Erica Wirth, and welcome to this Pianist podcast. Today I am speaking to Anna about her new album, Opus One, and lots more. Anna, it's so lovely to have you on the Pianist podcast today.
Thank you so much, Erica. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I think what we're going to do is kick off by talking about your new album, which is called Opus One, which I think is a wonderful title. And in your illuminating booklet notes, you say that all the composers on the album share a common thread, the experience of the beginning. So if you can expand on this a little.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With great pleasure. First of all, I'm kind of a Opus One myself because I was born on a 1st of January 1991. So I'm actually, opening and launching the year with my birthday. So actually, though, that's how this crazy idea appeared on my mind. But of course, the idea felt quite essential to me because each of these works that are listed and in this album is a first word from different composers coming from different parts of the world, filled with both uncertainty and courage, right? And I just wanted to capture that sense of discovery, vulnerability, raw, youthful energy, and all this. So that was
Absolutely. Well,
the
I think
idea.
you're right. I mean, they were all obviously pretty young,
Absolutely.
when they did their Opus Ones. And obviously, the Schumann's Arbeg Variations and the Berg Sonata are very well known, but the others on the album are lesser known, especially they're not performed so much. So maybe you could tell us a bit about the other works.
Absolutely. Of course, there are lesser known pieces that were written by, for example, Clementi, or even Rondo Opus One, written by Frédéric Chopin, is also on a lesser side, a lesser known side, which is quite fascinating because I think, living in our era, it's extremely hard to find something which can be which can remain undiscovered. And when I stumbled across this fascinating piece written by 15-year-old Chopin, I realized, okay, so this is one of my favorite works, and I would love to record it. But of course, they are rarely programmed, but that's what drew me to them. And they show the composers in their raw searching states rather than
Polished.
before they were defined by style, I would say so. And of course, when it comes to Berg, this absolutely majestic sonata, it contains so much vulnerability because he was in quite unconscious state of mind. I mean, he was suffering from finding enough level of self-confidence while he was writing this piece, and this particular music reflects on this subject, so we can actually feel this uncertainty coming from each musical line. It really is fascinating.
But what's interesting about Alban Berg, for example, is this Opus One has become so revered. He obviously wrote other piano pieces, Klavierstück, and they're way less known. How did it's amazing that an Opus One has stood out like that, isn't it?
My impression is that maybe those early Klavierstücken, they are more experimental, I would say so. But the sonata, even though despite of the fact that it's just Opus One, already holds so much of Berg's mature world, but which we will experience afterwards
Yes.
in his more popular works like Wozzeck or whatever. I mean, it's absolutely it is amazing to see how he could predict his own musical language, starting
Yes.
literally from scratch, starting from the very beginning.
That's quite interesting because then you look at somebody, you look at a composer like Scriabin, who started
Oh
off
yeah.
very very classically romantic-y, totally different, didn't he?
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, Scrubbing was also in my list, but unfortunately, due to the time limitation, we're still limited in 80 minutes for each CD. And unfortunately, I could not record Scrubbing's wonderful pieces of one, but yeah, probably next time.
Which is the Opus One Scriabin?
If I'm not mistaken, they're like preludes or some like album leaves or something like
Yes,
that. I
but
might be wrong
beautiful
though.
pieces. We love Scriabin. Scriabin is amazing.
Oh yes.
Oh yes. And the Brahms Sonata, Opus One, Sonata Number One, Opus One. That's not played much today, is it?
Absolutely, and it's very true to say that it's not his most performed piece, but I find it incredibly honest and youthful. And of course, you know, you can hear him wrestling with Beethoven and trying to find his own language. And of course, probably you know that he's been stricken by this idea. He was obsessed with an idea of what should I write in order to conquer Beethoven's Hammerklavier Sonata. And then he wrote this Brahms sorry, Sonata Opus 1 number 1 in C major, which does not last 40 minutes, definitely. But it's so bombastic, it's so pompous and so grander, right? And it really fascinates me every time when I, you know, I actually, of course, it's not possible to compare these particular pieces, but at least you can trace the evidence of youthful abundancy of creativity and energy that he was trying to put into this music.
Fascinating. Yeah, because I think a lot of pianists feel that it is slightly too bombastic. It can come across. Yeah.
You just need to find like the middle between like being super emotional and super energetic and still, you know, finding this fragility, especially when it comes to the third movement, because it's one of his, you know, most tender and almost whispering melodies that he would pick for his music.
Wonderful, wonderful. And then I think the only one we haven't touched on is Tchaikovsky, his two pieces, Opus One. I must say the impromptu is just gorgeous.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, Impromptu was the starting point of this album, because I think I discovered this piece almost 7 or 8 years ago, and I was driven by its creativity and also its fragility and tenderness. I think, I mean, I might be wrong though, that, you know, it actually reminded me about, you know, some of the tunes that been that been used by Radiohead in their albums. And you know,
Radiohead.
yes, and I'm obsessed. I'm a biggest fan of Radiohead group, so I was like, oh my God, this is absolutely incredible. And of course, you know, having musical background, it always strikes you how these melodies could be picked and used in different circumstances in different fields of music. So after that, I realized, okay, so I should try to think about this idea of Opus One more precisely, more carefully. So that's how it all started. Yeah, but regarding the Tchaikovsky pieces, it's a kind of a revelation, because of course you know that music has become the second degree for Tchaikovsky, and he started composing music at the age of 23, 24. And but before that, he graduated as a lawyer, so he got a degree as a lawyer. from the university. But then he decided that probably he's just doing something wrong, or maybe this particular field is not something that he would really would like to dedicate his life to. That's how it all turned out.
It's
And
amazing.
this particular two pieces were written at the age of 24. I think this is these pieces are the oldest, the most
Yes.
matured ones, I
Yes,
would
exactly.
say.
Exactly. Wow, that's so interesting. Absolutely interesting. And what I like about you, I mean, this has got a fun, I really like the idea behind the concept behind this album, but and the one that you've done previously, the solo album, is one that's called Berceuse Lullaby. Inventive programming as well. How did that idea come about?
Well, of course, that was a very personal project, and music connected to tenderness, comfort, motherhood. And by the time that I realized that I have this opportunity to record something, I became a mother of second child, like Cleburne guy. We would call him like that, because he was actually was actively participating in the Cleburne competition in 2022. So this particular album just grew very naturally out of my life
That's
at that
amazing.
moment. And we picked these 18 composers, again coming from different parts of the world, just to see and to make kind of as an assessment. What do we have? What kind of works have been dedicated to this theme, to this particular theme? And I was absolutely amazed by the amount of the music that I've never heard in my life, and that's how it went.
I know. I mean, the berceuse. I mean, you could have volume after volume of
Oh yeah,
berceuses, couldn't you? I mean.
absolutely. But unfortunately, I was told to make recordings only of lesser known pieces, so
Okay.
that's why, unfortunately, I had to omit, for example, very popular Berceuse written by Frédéric Chopin, even though I would love to play this music, but it was actually the regulations, the conditions that we agreed on before the recording session.
Oh my goodness. That's so lovely though that you were, of course, you were pregnant at the Van Cliburn. How many months did you know you were?
I think it was by the end of this competition, I was already 7 months pregnant. Yeah.
My goodness, my goodness. I mean,
Yeah, it was
talking of
crazy.
the competition, I know that in these international competitions aren't for everyone, and you never know who's going to win. It's potluck. Well, it's not potluck, but sometimes you just don't know who the judges are going to choose. But by you having been awarded silver, at the Van Cliburn, it seems to have really, the recognition and everything behind that seems to have catapulted your career even more. Would you say that?
Absolutely. It's I mean, I would probably it would be probably fair to say that it was kind of a turning point for me, both professionally and personally, because it not only opens so many doors and opportunities, but it also gave me, the enough level of confidence in my artistic voice. Because I think, of course, I've been to so many different competitions before this one, and even though I had quite a success during the previous editions, that would be probably the milestone of my career as a competitor.
You won't be doing it again.
No, definitely not. I'm too old for this.
I, and you were 31, weren't you, at the time? Because of COVID,
Exactly. Yes, they made a special exception. So I was lucky enough to be admitted for the for the preliminary and then the main phase of the competition because of the COVID. It's really it's incredible thing to say that COVID actually helped me
Yes. Oh my goodness.
suddenly
Wow.
enough, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was there in Texas. It was fantastic, and what a year it was. And what I thought was so special was that the three of you who got the top prizes seemed to really be so happy with one another. It felt like such a joyous finals, you know?
Absolutely, and I would probably say that we starting from the beginning of this competition, we never felt like we are rivals or we're competing against each other or we just need to, I don't know, like conquer the final rounds and kick off our highly proclaimed established career and solo performer. No, nothing related to that. I think we were all staying there as family members, and we treated each other as family members or friends. During these hard times when we had to face the results announcement, we were sharing these emotions, and of course, it was so hard to see that some of your great friends. They're unfortunately, they have to leave this battlefield. But then in the end, during the final round, I think we all were rooting for each other. And actually during the competition, I watched so many live streaming videos because I was really curious about some people, some dear friends of mine who were also taking part in that competition. And of course, we're not here to judge. And I was super grateful for that opportunity to be ranked amongst the top three finalists. But of course it's been really intense moment that we all got through, and it taught us both of us resilience and probably perspective, but also that the real artistry begins after the competition ends.
Absolutely. And most probably having won silver rather than gold, you maybe were a little bit more able to prepare for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, Yunshan Lim, I have such brilliant memories from his performances live. And actually, that was the only one chance that I could hear him live because after that, we were all busy with our own solo careers.
Yes, of course.
And but the only one thing is still quite funny that during the, if I'm not mistaken, there was like a results announcement between the second round and the semi-final. And I was there on the stage waiting until the results are being introduced to us. And then there was Jacques Marquis who was just going getting through the list of successful candidates, and then when he announced my name, I was trying to calculate in my head in which day should I play, and it suddenly turned out that I should play the next day, the following morning, 10 a.m. session.
Oh my.
And but the results were announced around 1 a.m. in the night, so I had less than 8 hours to actually get ready and play the semi-final round. So it was one of the scariest moments, and I still remember that after finishing this round, there were so many people who were actually rooting for us backstage, and they all came to support me, saying that Anna, You are not smiling. That's not a great sign. You should smile no matter how exhausted you are. Yes, that's the lesson that I have to learn.
Wow. Well, you see, and you obviously had so much adrenaline that you were able to do your next round absolutely fine, you know.
Yes.
Oh, what a wonderful story. Absolutely wonderful. Now, your husband, Lukasz Cheniuszasz,
Yes.
is also a pianist and a very well-known pianist. How did you meet?
We met during our school years. It was all happening in college, a musical college named after Frédéric Chopin in Moscow. I think he was 2 years older, and we actually, started our romance with the music, definitely. So music united us.
Oh.
Because he, I was looking for a pianist who could accompany me the orchestral part of Liszt's second piano concerto, and that was Lucas who decided to help me out, and that's how it turned out.
That is terribly romantic. How wonderful. And I mean, you must, he went on to win or, got placed high in the Moscow in 2015, and you were a finalist in Leeds in 2018. It's amazing how, you went on this journey together. And recently you made a two piano album.
Oh yeah.
Hallelujah Junction.
Hallelujah Junction. Yes, this is that was our beloved third child. But that album was a joy to make, and it's all about pure rhythm, like adrenaline and energy.
Yeah.
And of course, sometimes playing together feels like a very intensive conversation full of freedom, but also trust, because without trust you can do nothing.
I mean, I do admire that the two of you're married, you play together. I mean, it's like you're joined at the hip. I mean, do you both think along the same lines musically, or do you go, or do you have arguments about
Well, of course we do argue sometimes, of course, but it's like a creative kind of argument. It pushes us both to to listen more deeply. And what is really important that we know each other's strengths, and it's more about complementing than competing. And of course, when it comes to like a proper preparation for recording session or for duo project, like for performance, we always discuss, okay, so what from different perspective, from different angles, we just need to make an assessment whether this particular work would fit us both greatly, or it would be like a bloody hell battle. Even during the performance, but of course, throughout these hard times, I think we always reach the final spot, which would we would definitely be greatly appreciated by us as a duo. At least,
Fine.
this is our main goal, main aim. I don't know whether it's successful or not every time, but we're trying to do our best.
It's lovely. It's lovely. And there's no competitiveness between the two of you.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because sometimes I learn so much from Lucas, because he's much more into, for example, contemporary music. He knows so much about this. I mean, of course, I had also my own experience, but I think I just I'm lacking confidence exactly when it comes to preparing the something like which was written like not so long time ago. I think my strong side are still like emotion, or building up the scenario, or at least the texture, or combining some musical ideas into one into one creature and one space, and putting it together. So we're just, I think we all work together. We work from different perspectives, and it makes our collaboration even more fruitful and interesting because we always are, getting deeper throughout our own similar efforts.
That's amazing. I mean, there must be music constantly in the house, in the home.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think our neighbors are cursing us.
How many pianos do you have? One or two?
Two and plus electric keyboards, just for overnight practicing.
Overnight. I like that. And you live in Berlin. You live in Berlin.
Yes, we recently moved to Berlin, and yeah, we're still newcomers. I don't know whether it would be our final stop or not, but at least for now, Berlin is being called our home.
Where were you before? Where were you living before?
We've been living in Vilnius, and
Okay.
before that, actually London, because I was studying at Royal Academy of Music
Yes, I
for
know.
entire 3.5 years.
Yeah, and you were studying with Christopher Elton.
Yes.
You.
Dear Christopher Elton, he is the still one of my probably best friends, and he is so dedicated to music, and I learned so much from his own experience, being not only a professional pianist but also a professional cellist. So he got 2 degrees simultaneously, and I think it is one of the most influential things that I discovered throughout our relations, because he was always adjudicating my playing, not from the perspective of solo pianist, but also thinking more deeply into details, getting more into the details, thinking about the orchestration rather than dealing with all these pianistic
Yes.
problems.
Yeah.
And it really gave me an extra boost
Yes.
For my own self-reflection afterwards. So I'm still learning from what I inherited throughout this wonderful 3 years that I spent with him.
And do you still play for him?
Unfortunately, due to visa restrictions, I'm not a regular visitor to the UK because nowadays it becomes
Oh my goodness.
such an ordeal to get a visa. Yeah, so I wish I could travel more actively, but yeah, I'm not allowed.
Oh my goodness,
Yes.
that's shocking. Oh dear. Oh well, let's get away from that. Let's get away from that. I think now, actually, I'd like to ask you some rather light-hearted questions as we're
Absolutely.
getting
Sure.
towards
Feel
the
free.
end. And if you could just answer them off the cuff, how you feel. It might not be so simple. It could
Sure.
be one answer. Might not be just one answer. But anyway, here we go. If you could play only one composer from now on, who would it be?
Probably prefer Maurice Ravel.
No.
Absolutely. Because I find so many incredible things embroidered into his musical lines. That probably I would love to spend the rest of my days living with this music and using this fuel until I peacefully die.
Goodness, that's quite phenomenally. That's such an unusual answer. That's wonderful. Gosh, okay, I'll try and absorb that.
Why not?
Next one. One pianist, dead or alive, you would travel long and far to hear.
Radu Lupu, definitely, and Arturo Benedetti Michelangeli.
Both very different.
Yes, these two giants were my role models since my childhood, And unfortunately, I did not have this opportunity to hear them live. But if we can stage it, I would love to be present in the audience, at least to experience it live, because to if I can rely on some of my friends' expertise who were so lucky to hear them live, these moments were divine. They were absolutely impossible even to express it in words. That was the level of geniality that they could produce during their live performances.
I heard Lupu. I mean, he was remarkable, but yeah, good choices there, good choices.
Thank you.
One person, dead or alive, you'd love to play for.
I think probably it would be. Oh, actually, I would love to play to the Queen Elizabeth II, definitely, because I admired her remarkable artistry and the genuinity of her personality. Because what I read about her, I just realized that she was very sincere and honest with each of the human being that she was interacting with. And what I really liked about her is that to my taste, she was always giving her honest feedback. Then, if I had this opportunity, I would definitely play something to her and see what would be the reaction.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, and I would definitely love to experience that. But yeah, maybe we just need to wait until it comes.
On to the next. Do you have any technical struggles on the piano?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you can dedicate all your entire life getting through all these, horrible passages and, struggling with finding the right fingerings, or resolving all these puzzles and troubleshooting the problems. And you can definitely spend the rest of your days while dealing with all this. But in this case, you would just lack the pure love towards music making. So I'm just trying to stay on a positive side, because you will never definitely reach the level of excellency which would guarantee you an absolutely nice and smooth journey. So you
Of
just need
course.
to accept your imperfection and live with all this, and just continue enjoying what you are doing,
Oh,
because
very wonderful. Yeah.
otherwise, the music will be performed by ChatGPT.
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay, so what would be your advice to an amateur pianist about how to improve?
Also, I think what is really important is dedication and determination. Don't lose your interest when you're facing some challenges. This is very hard, but once you kick off, you just need to keep going until you see the visible results. It may take some time, though, but never wait for immediate change, because it's not how things should be doing. I mean, every time we put a seed into a soil, we just need to keep patient and wait until it starts blooming, or it gets fruitful progress. And the same applies to the music. You just need to wait on compassion until you definitely, get to the point.
Very wise words. Okay, if you weren't a pianist, what would you be?
Oh, that's a very good question. I don't know, because actually, at the age of 14, I decided, I made a final decision that I would love to start my professional career as a pianist. But before that, my mother really wanted me to become a translator and to just to get a degree in international law. So, I actually was not so far away from Tchaikovsky's first degree. That's how things were supposed to be. But I think, with my temperament, and it would have not been possible, because I cannot really make something constantly without any delays, without any interruptions. I'm more energetic and more creative. But I would probably, now, if we're talking about current times, if I need to stop playing, I would probably become a stage director, because I'm very, very into these things. I like this.
Do you go to a lot of opera, theater?
Quite a lot, quite a lot. Of course, I cannot really say that I'm an expert, but I would love to, to get more into details of these such things.
And finally, the last question, one composer you're not quite ready to tackle?
Oh well, probably Bach. Still Johann Sebastian Bach, because it was actually definitely starting point for me. But I think you just need to, to get more matured in order to deliver his music at its best. And also because of the reason that I mean, his works were published quite a long time ago, so we have like a huge age gap between the music that was written and the current times. So I would say, probably for me it is still really hard to adjust myself, to convert myself into a completely different creature in order to bring this musical ideas to the certain point which could be discoverable or recognized by the larger audience. But that's my personal opinion. Every time I have to play Bach, I'm getting so nervous. I'm getting so nervous because so many things are being were being put into musical lines. So many things were and ideas were decoded. So it's a never-ending process of discovery and actually learning experience. So you could definitely dedicate all your life while trying to absorb his legacy, and it's still not enough. Lifetime is not enough to discover all those things.
Well, you might wake up one day and think now's the
Maybe it happens. Who knows?
Oh, Anna, listen, it's been absolutely wonderful here, but I think we've come to the end.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Erica. Thank you.
I know
It
you're a
was so
busy.
great. That
Yeah,
was
you're
so
busy.
great
You're
to.
off to Spain, aren't you? You're off to Seville.
Yes, I'm hopefully getting there without any further delays, because we're now experiencing some problems with Berlin Airport, as always. I mean, it's our, traditional
Oh,
things,
dear.
that usual life, busy life of an artist. It's
Of course, of course. Well, I wish you well on your travels and your performances.
Thank you so much.
And
Thank
thank
you,
you so
Erica.
much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. That was the last movement of Brahms's Piano Sonata Number 1, and it was performed by Anna Genushenya. Pianist podcasts are free, and a really good way to support what we do is by subscribing to Pianist. Visit our website at pianistmagazine.com and listen to us on YouTube by searching Pianist Magazine. And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter, which is full of extra playing tips and useful information. Go to pianistmagazine.com to find out how to sign up.